What makes this a little bit difficult is that all questions about the origin of the universe are deeply puzzling. So, of course, we're going to get into great trouble when we ask questions like, was there a first cause and which thing was it? If I brought up the Big Bang and I said, can't we say that's the first cause? It's very natural to say, I'm not satisfied. I want to know what caused that. And maybe there was a cause of the Big Bang. Maybe we can't know what it is. Maybe we don't know what it is now. And with anything we can bring up in terms of which is meant to be the origin of things, it looks like we can ask the question, what caused that? Those are genuinely puzzling questions. I'm not trying to say that those are questions we haven't any answer to. I don't have any answer to them. I think we're in trouble whichever way we go. It seems difficult to suppose an infinite series of causes. It seems difficult to suppose anything could be the first cause. The problem is that postulating God as the first cause doesn't get you out of any of these difficulties. It just puts you in the difficulties in a different form. Just stipulating that God is the first cause doesn't prevent the question, but what did cause God? If God's something which existed, and everything which exists was caused to exist by something else, something must have caused God to exist. How do we avoid that? How can we prove that question is illegitimate? We don't seem to be able to do that. So the cosmological argument, again, has this problem. Now, another problem, which is parallel to the problem I mentioned with the design argument, is this. It's the same point again, really. Suppose we even were to accept the cosmological argument, so we thought God was the first cause. Trouble is, we can't get from that to the conception of God as traditionally conceived. How do we move from the fact that there had to have been a first cause, and we're going to call it God, to the fact that God has got various attributes, such as being all good or all knowing? There's no logical connection between those two things. All we've got is the idea that there had to have been something, a being of some sort, which is the first cause, and we're going to call it God. But by what right do we attribute to that first cause the attributes traditionally attributed to God? Why couldn't it be something else entirely? Why couldn't we say the first cause is something which has opposite attributes to God? Why on earth should it follow from the fact that God is the first cause that he has those other attributes, particularly the attributes having to do with his virtue and his purposes for mankind? I mean, why do the purposes of man he has for mankind, which are traditionally ascribed to God, why do they follow from the fact that he originated everything? Why couldn't he have originated everything and then gone off somewhere else and forgot about the universe? All we prove from the first cause argument is something that falls far short, even if we accepted the argument, of the traditional view of God. So that argument, again, is not satisfying, and I think it would be true to say that few people would accept the argument today. It's a clever argument, but it's not an argument which ultimately convinces. The third argument is called the ontological argument. It's due to St. Anselm of Canterbury, again, a medieval theologian. It's one of the first arguments I ever came across in philosophy. I think it's an absolutely brilliant argument in terms of its conceptual structure, but it's, again, an argument which I think very few believers would take to be their reason for believing in God. Though for philosophers it's attractive because of its extremely impressive conceptual character and its deductive nature. So I'm going to try to spell out this argument. It's not an easy argument to follow, but I'm going to try to make it as easy as I can. The ontological argument says this. It says that the existence of God can be proved to follow from the very definition of God. So once we know the definition of God, we can infer from that analytically. We came across that concept before. It follows from the very concept that God exists. The idea is God is the only object in the world from which its existence follows from its very definition. For example, if I define a unicorn for you, I say unicorn is a horse with a single horn growing out of its nose. Nothing in that definition entails that unicorns exist, and of course unicorns don't exist. And that's generally the case. The way things are defined, saying what kind of things they are, doesn't tell you that they exist. But according to Anselm, God is unique in the respect that once you understand his definition, you see that he must exist. Why? God is defined as the most perfect being. In fact, he's defined, as Anselm says, as the being than which nothing more perfect can be conceived. That is, he's the most conceivably perfect being. No more perfect being can be conceived than God. He has every perfection and no imperfections. So since God is the most perfect being conceivable, he must have all the perfections. Let's consider the property of existing. And let's suppose that God does not exist for the purpose of this argument. So God does not exist, and yet he has all the perfections. Well, if he does not exist, isn't he inferior to a God who does exist and otherwise has all the same perfections as the God which doesn't exist? In other words, isn't existence an addition to the perfections of any being? To be perfect, a being must exist, because Any being which lacked existence would be less perfect than a being who had existence. Since God is the most perfect conceivable being, he has more perfections than any other being. So no being can be more perfect than God. But if there were a being that existed, and otherwise was just like God, he would be more perfect than God if God didn't exist. So God must exist because he's the most perfect conceivable being. So